and Sue are at the Proctor's wedding today. David's actually doing the wedding, which is why he couldn't come. And I guess all the other guys on his list couldn't preach today, so he called me. And so in the Preacher 101 manual, it says you're supposed to tell jokes, and I don't have any this morning. I'm sorry. But I do have a couple little stories. My dear friend Tim Sheffield, who's an officer with the Sandy Springs Police Department, he told me he's going to the rifle range after church, so don't go long. All right, I won't. I'll try not to. Also, a dear friend of mine, James Lloyd, one time he came into church kind of late, and he sat near me, and after the service was over, the guy, I don't even remember who it is now, but the guy who was preaching kind of came up to him and said, "So, James, what did you think? How did I do?" And James said, "I don't know, but the last 45 minutes were pretty good." He was late. Okay. Anyway, I do understand why people preach long. It's because you're petrified of not having enough to say, and so you get up here, and after 5 minutes, you're like, done. And that would be embarrassing, so you over-prepare, and then you go too long. So I'll try not to do that, but I did over-prepare, probably. Over the last month or so, David's been talking about, you know, worship and what that's all about. You know, that really it's about love God and love your neighbors. And so two weeks ago in Luke 10, he kind of shared the story of the Good Samaritan and talked about, you know, the principle there was the Samaritan was the guy who had mercy. And he said, if you want to be a good neighbor, go and do likewise. And then last week, he did from Romans 8, this is amazing to me, from Romans 8, he preached about the Princess Bride, right? An incredible story. I never saw the movie, but now I've got to see it because of the stuff he shared. But anyway, it's basically the whole creation is groaning in anticipation for our adoption, you know, for the struggle to be over, for us to be adopted into the kingdom of God and to live in eternity. And basically, the idea there is we can love our neighbors by participating with them in the groans, in the struggles, in the challenges, and being an example of really the term he used was the world doesn't need to see our perfection, but our redemption. And that's so true. You know, people don't need to see somebody that's all put together and looks like they have a great life and a great family and a great job and all those things. Because people can't connect with that, right? Because honestly, that's none of us. That is none of us. All of us have struggles and challenges and difficulties and joys and sorrows and all those things. And we really have to learn how to not try to present a facade or a mask with people, but to be real. Because that's what people need, is people who are real. And if we live that way, God really can use us. So what I wanted to share about today is just kind of practically speaking some of the things that I think work by watching other people do it, mainly. Trying to do some of it myself and failing, but some things that actually help do that, to help us be not perfect, but to share our redemption story with people, to be that to people. There's a quote that I love. It's called, "Men often hate each other because they fear each other. They fear each other because they don't know each other. They don't know each other because they cannot communicate. They cannot communicate because they are separated." That's Martin Luther King Jr. in 1958. It's still true today, right? I mean, it doesn't take laws and man-made rules for us to be separated. Satan wants us to be separated, right? That's what he works towards, is to separate us from each other, to keep us apart and distant, to keep us fearful of each other and afraid of what people are going to say or think or do. That's really his goal. He wants to divide us. He wants us to be lonely, fearful, insecure. That's not what God created us to be. God created us to be tribal. Right, to belong to a group, to be part of a family. He wants us to be connected with each other and connected with him. And really, that's what love God and love your neighbor is to me. It's about connection. You know, we all have things in common with almost everybody we meet. Probably with everybody we ever meet, no matter how different they are from us, no matter how different their background or the color of their skin or their ideology or their political beliefs, it doesn't really matter, because there are more things that connect us than things that don't, that separate us and divide us. Really, I think part of our goal is to find those things with people, find the things that connect us to each other. I even have a goal of doing that in as simple as getting on an elevator at the office. Used to be, I would get on the elevator, there'd be other people there, or even one other person, and I wouldn't say anything, they wouldn't say anything, we'd ride on the elevator, we'd get off the strangers just like we had gotten on. At some point, I went, you know, this just doesn't make sense to me that God would put two or more of us together on an elevator and nothing happens. We're lost in our own world, or we're too afraid or insecure to speak up. I want to be the person who speaks up. I want to be the one who looks at them and gives them, at least for a fleeting moment, a sense that they matter. They matter to somebody. They matter to me. They matter to God. I've always wanted that, right? And when people do that to me, my first reaction is they're trying to sell me Amway or something, right? They want to sign me, right? I mean, there's suspicion. It's just not normal to be that way. But I want to be that way because it inspires me when I come across people who are that way. And so here's some of the practical things that I've learned how to do that helps me to do that. I think about what are the things that are in common with me and other people. And there's a very wide spectrum of things. Your experiences is one area, right? I mean, if you're a parent, and they may be a parent. If you're a child, we're all children, right? I mean, if you're an employee or a boss or you're a student, a spouse, a son, a daughter, a veteran, you name it. There's some area, something that you've done or you've experienced that other person has probably also been through. Isn't it a great challenge and idea to try to find that in a short amount of time? You know, I bring up football. It's just the easiest thing with a guy is to bring up football, especially during football season. But then to try to get from there to some common connection with this person in a matter of 30 seconds. I enjoy doing that because what it requires you to do is ask them questions, right? You just have to talk to them. You got to focus on them instead of, I guess you could tell your story, but probably it wouldn't connect with them as well as asking them about theirs. And to me, the amazing experience I've had with people is when you start asking them about their story, they very quickly feel like you're awesome. They love you. You're a great person. You know, you're a man of wisdom and character, and they don't know anything about you, really. You haven't talked at all, but maybe it's just because you showed that you cared by asking them, and that's a rare thing that happens. You know, other things, obviously, are interests that you have or they have, right? Ask them what they love to do, or ask them, you know, do they like art, or do they like movies, or have you seen that latest movie? You know, anything that tries to get them to talk about themselves or what they care about. People often open up very quickly once you start to ask them questions about themselves. This doesn't work in an elevator, but it works in other settings. Ask somebody what their dream is. You know, what is your dream? When you were a kid, you're growing up, you know, what was it you wanted to do? And, for me, I wanted to play college football. The amazing thing that happened there was my parents didn't let me play football. I played in, like, Little League Pee Wee. But then when I got to middle school, they said, no, we don't want you to play. We don't want you to get hurt, which probably is a blessing now. But at the time, it crushed my dreams because my dream was to play college football. And then I went to Clemson. I started playing rugby, which is a club sport. It was fun, and I was pretty good at it and started to have it reigniting the dream. Hey, maybe I could still play college football. And Vicky really inspired me to actually try, to actually call and find out about trying out, which I did. I went and tried out. There were like 106 other guys that showed up for the tryout. Clemson was like national champions the year before, and, you know, it was a pretty big deal. And they, of course, you know, the Rudy story. It was they put us through the ringer. It was terrible. I mean, it was, you know, hot. It was brutal. We got picked on. We got beat up. We had to get up early in the morning and do drills. We had to do drills in the middle of the day. We, you know, had to practice till almost dark some nights, and it was very hard. And I kind of caught on that this is basically, they want to see what you're made of here. This isn't about, you know, how good you are. It's about how much perseverance do you have. And, you know, being Scottish heritage, that's all I need is a challenge. You know, just challenge me. Come on, bring it. So anyway, long story short, at the end of that tryout period and the entire spring practice, there were only five of us left. And they weren't the best five, right? I mean, there were tons of guys who were faster, stronger, bigger, better football players than we were. But it's just because we didn't quit. We just didn't quit. Anyway, I say that story to say every one of you have a story like that, right, that you can share with people that inspires them and encourages them that, you know, dreams are okay to have. Dreams are awesome. Don't crush your dreams. It's a way to connect with people that I'm still amazed. I mean, here it is 30, almost 40 years later, people still ask me about that experience. You know, and there are tons of those stories that all of you have that you can share with people, and you can ask other people and learn about theirs. The next thing I want to say is, now this is not so much about the interactions with people. This is actually kind of prepares you for what could happen when that occurs. And it's that, you know, that you can't miss the miracles. You know, that we're surrounded by miracles. God produces miracles in our relationships. And I just, you know, there are tons of other miracles that aren't relationship related, but I just want to focus on that topic, that area of miraculous things. It's amazing to me if you sit down and just start to count the number of ways that God has worked in your life through people or worked in somebody else's life through you. To me, one of the most amazing still is my wife Vicki and I. We met at Clemson University one night before the Georgia-Clemson game in 1981, and it was truly love at first sight. Honestly was. I mean, we ended up getting married a year later. When I proposed to her, we'd only seen each other six times. 32 years later, she's still my one and only. We're still soulmates. Here's what's really interesting. I just had Kevin McDaniel just did kind of a psychological, I guess, profile, you know, personality traits or whatever. We could not be more opposite. I mean, there is no possible way two people could be any more opposite in almost every area. But what's amazing is how God has taken that and molded one whole out of the two of us that's a lot more capable, a lot more organized, a lot more intuitive. There's a lot of traits that the two of us together, that's a miracle. That is a miracle, and you have that in your life. The people you come across, they have those things in their life. They just may not see it. They may not, you know, they may miss it because they're focused on the struggles or the sorrows or the challenges. I think about Jamie, my son. He decided at the last minute he didn't want to come, and that's okay. He's dealing with some teenage issues and some other challenges. But, you know, Vicki and I lost our son, Bo, and without a son, it was tough. We had two daughters who were awesome and beautiful, but when you got a son and then he's gone, it was hard. And there's no way to fill that hole. There's no way. It's still there. But to have a boy in my life, God brought Jamie to us from halfway around the world, from Romania, an orphanage in Romania. And the cool thing is, Jamie loves football, and he loves video games, right? I mean, he's perfectly suited for me. He also has challenged me in ways that I never would have expected. You know, he's special needs, he's autistic, and he has to work through stuff. It's a talk therapy thing with him. And so I have to take long walks with him and just talk and listen and talk and listen and talk and almost on a daily basis. And we've done this for years. But it's a miracle when I think about how God has interwoven his life in my life. And sometimes it's scary, you know, seeing he's going through the difficult teen years. And, you know, I was telling Vicki the other day, it's kind of like this. You just got to pray they don't hurt themselves or somebody else, and they're going to come through it, and it's going to be amazing. Which leads me to another one of those miraculous stories is my daughter, Brantley. When she was a teen, she went through some very difficult times, some rebellious things, some, you know, attitude challenges, etc., and God love her. I love her to death. I always told Vicki, I said, you know what? Brantley is just training for Jamie, because at the time, Jamie was 10 or 12 or something. I said, when he becomes a teen, Lord, it's going to be tough. Well, here's one of those amazing events. Vicki and I went to a Christmas dinner party with the dentist's office that she was working at, and there was one of her coworkers named Wendy, a girl in her mid-20s, and Wendy said, you know, we were kind of sharing some of the struggles we were going through with Brantley, and Wendy said, the best thing my parents ever did for me was kick me out. And I was out on my own, and I couldn't, you know, I had to struggle to figure out how to live, but it really opened my eyes. I was like, oh, Lord, okay, I hear it. I can't imagine it, but certainly that's exactly what we ended up doing, because really the inspiration of the things this woman said and how it made me go, I can't even imagine kicking her out. I love her so much. It's breaking my heart to do it. But if that's the only way for her to be able to one day say it was the best thing that ever happened, that's what she says today, is that's the best thing that ever happened. And I thank God for that. Anyway, I could go on for hours about the stories, right? And so can you. That's kind of the point, is that we've got to see and recognize that we are surrounded by miracles on a daily basis. And all we need to do is open our mouths about it, right? Connect with people and share it with them, and listen to them, ask them about theirs, because that's what really changes our life and theirs, right, is to really recognize God's working. So really, you know, it's about connecting people with God and connecting people with us or with each other. So some of the, you know, the things that will come along, and obviously this is probably the toughest part, is people have needs, right? You come across people that have got needs. Almost everybody has needs, some more so than others. Some don't want to talk about it, but it kind of comes out of their pores, and you can really sense it. Others seems like they have a long list of needs, and you're overwhelmed, and you're like, there's no way I can help this person. But part of that is the power of God is you guys, the group. It's the people, right? We don't have to be the answer man or answer woman or the solution, the problem solver for everybody's problems, because we can't. It's impossible. God is that, right? God solves all problems, and a lot of them he does it through you, through people. So Malcolm Gladwell wrote a book called The Tipping Point, and it's a marketing thing or whatever, but one of the cool things in there is he talked about there are certain people who are connectors, and people who are mavens. The mavens are like the really bright ones who, you know, are a genius and know how to cure cancer or stuff like that. And I'm not one of those or anything like that. But the one that really appealed to me is some people are connectors. So what he talked about with connectors is they just know a lot of people. And they know a lot about a lot of people. And because of that, what they can do is connect people together based on the needs and the talents or gifts or abilities, and really just facilitate relationships with people. Ultimately, I believe that's what I want to be, and I believe that's what we ought to be to some level, is connectors. We know tons of people in this church. We know people all over the world that we are very close with because of the way God has worked in our lives. And we know a lot about those people, right? Because we were involved deeply in their lives, we know what they're good at and what they can do to help people. So we should be able to use that to connect people to the resources, really, that they need. And I think the more we recognize that and realize how much even a miracle that is, that God brought us through all that to bring us here, where we have that worldwide network of people and resources. So last of all, I just want us to focus on being real. You know, there's enough fake stuff out there. You know, you see it on TV every day. It's on the internet. I mean, There is nobody who has their life together. Nobody. I don't care how much they look like it. It's a facade. And if you don't believe me, when you see somebody that you think, man, they got their life together, talk to them. Spend some time with them. You'll find out pretty quick that their life's just as much a mess. Because as David said many times, we're broken people. It's really only through God that we're made whole. And that is a journey in itself, right? In Philippians 2, it says, therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any fellowship with the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and of one mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, consider others above yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interest, but also to the interests of others. People don't need to see our perfection. They just need to see our redemption.